Each of us has an inner money manager. So what happens if yours and your spouse's disagree? Hi, I'm Rob West. Couples who can reconcile differences about handling their finances avoid a lot of conflicts in marriage. Today, Matt Bell tells us how to do that by getting in touch with our inner money manager. And then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Well, it's always a treat to have Matt Bell on the program. Matt's the managing editor at Sound Mind Investing and the author of several books on personal finance, including Money and Marriage, A Complete Guide for Engaged and Newly Married Couples. Matt, great to have you back with us.
Great to be with you, Rob.
So, Matt, you have an article at soundmindinvesting.org titled Marriage and Your Inner Money Manager. Is it safe to say that we don't all have the same inner money manager?
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Rob. Because if you think about it, we all come at marriage from a unique set of experiences and ways of thinking about money. You know, we've been influenced by our parents, the culture we grew up in. And so really, I think one of the most significant differences that we often come into marriage with is a different temperament. And temperament plays a really important role in the ways that we think about and use money. In essence, temperament is our nature. It's how God has wired us up, which has a lot to do with how we just naturally react to certain situations. And temperament impacts all areas of our lives, but it certainly comes with inherent strengths and weaknesses when it comes to money. So that's why it can be so important for a husband and wife to understand each other's temperament. And it's really important to use those insights to learn how to manage money together as a team.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But speaking from personal experience, that's easier said than done, right?
That's absolutely true. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that the men and women tend to come at money from such different directions. There's a lot of interesting research out there, and these different perspectives on money can lead to conflict. So here's just a sampling of some of the research I've seen. For one thing, men and women tend to have different spending priorities. When you ask men and women about their indulgences or what they like to splurge on, for example, men are more likely to choose electronic gear, whereas women are more likely to say travel. Men and women come at money from different emotional perspectives. And this one, I think, is especially interesting. When asked what terms they associate with when it comes to money, men are more likely to say things like confidence. Women are more likely to choose terms like anxiety and even confusion. It's interesting, isn't it? Men and women are interested in different financial topics. Men tend to be more into investing and entrepreneurship, whereas women tend to gravitate toward articles about how to save on this or that. Men tend to be more likely to ask for more money. They tend to negotiate when applying for a job more so than women. And men tend to be more comfortable taking on higher levels of risk with investing, which often doesn't end well. The research shows that men tend to make more investment mistakes than women do. So there's just a lot of really interesting kind of natural ways that men and women tend to differ in their perspectives on money.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. And it really explains a lot of the conflict that arises in marriage. Now, making it even more challenging, though, I've heard that financial opposites attract. Is that actually right based on the research?
That is right, Rob. There's some interesting research out of Northwestern University and the University of Pennsylvania. And the research they did found that in moments of clear rational thinking, when we're just kind of thinking about what would suit us best in a mate, we tend to think of the type of person who is similar to us in how we think about and use money that seems logical to us. However, when the real world happens and someone we're actually attracted to walks by, we tend to choose a mate that's very different than us when it comes to money. For example, spendthrifts tend to marry tightwads and vice versa, and that can lead to a lot of conflict in marriage.
Interesting. What about our own financial situation? How do men and women differ there?
Yeah, it really varies quite a bit in terms of our men savers and women spenders, and those two opposites do tend to attract to each other. So, you know, it's not like one person is right and one person is absolutely wrong, but it's difficult sometimes to kind of naturally come together. It takes some time and some work.
Fascinating. What about how men and women differ in how they look at their own financial situation?
This one is really interesting, I think. So women tend to believe their situation is worse than it actually is, sometimes overstating how much debt they have. And men, they're just the opposite. They tend to believe their situation is better than it often is, sometimes overstating how much they earn.
Yeah, so interesting. All right, Matt Bell is here today. We're talking money and marriage. We're going to get into the solution. What do you do about it? Right around the corner. Stay with us.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. By the end of February, baseball players have begun meeting at spring training facilities all over the country. For some, baseball is the first sign of the winter season finally coming to an end. But there's another sign that winter is ending. It's rain. And it's good. We need rain to survive. Rain provides nourishment for crops. Zechariah 10 verse 1 tells us where the rain comes from. Ask the Lord for rain in the springtime. It is the Lord who sends the thunderstorms. He gives showers of rain to all people and plants of the field to everyone. So if you get a little rain today, just know it's the taste of a new season and you can thank the Lord for it. Get more daily encouragement from God's Word with Anchor Devotional. Visit getanchor.com.
Are you a financial advisor or CPA seeking to build your practice on biblical wisdom? Not only does the Certified Kingdom Advisor education provide you with deep biblical insights, the CKA designation sets you apart. Each year, almost 50,000 people search for a Christian financial advisor. Join our community and share your expertise with clients looking for someone who shares their faith and values. Find more information at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
Fostering and adoption is not a band-aid for infertility.
Nope,
like it is
agree.
A calling, and God can change the desire of your heart and make that so rewarding. It's the most beautiful, selfless thing. It's pure religion, but it's not a fix to I desire biological child. God has to deal with that in your heart separately.
Hannah's Heart, encouraging couples through infertility and miscarriage. Saturdays, 4 a.m. Central on AFR or on the AFR app.
We are grateful for support from One Ascent Investments on the Faith and Finance program. They manage a comprehensive suite of value-based investment strategies designed to help Christian investors live aligned with what they value most. One Ascent believes that if your values inspire the way you live, they should also inspire the way you invest. This can be a unique form of worship. More information is available at investments.oneascent.com. That web address is investments.oneascent.com.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Well, we've all heard the statistics. Conflict around money in marriage is off the charts. So what do we do about it? Well, with us today is our friend Matt Bell. He's managing editor at Sound Mind Investing. You can learn more at soundmindinvesting.org. And while you're there, check out the article we're talking about today that Matt wrote. It's called Marriage and Your Inner Money Manager. Now, before the break, Matt, you were telling us about all the ways that we're different based on the research and that so often opposites attract. So it's not unexpected that we would have conflict in this area of money in marriage. But I'm ready to talk about what we can do about it. So how can we reconcile these differences?
Yeah, well, something that can help a lot is learning more about how God has wired you up and how God has wired up your spouse. You know, this gets back to temperament, which we touched on briefly earlier. So knowing your temperament and that of your spouse will go a long way toward helping you understand why both of you do what you do with money and pretty much everything else for that matter.
Right.
But it can help you work together as a team. I think temperament is just a fascinating thing to discover about yourself and about your spouse. You never quite finish the discovery, but it's just a fascinating set of insights that comes with this effort. So even the simple insight that a person's temperament typically doesn't change, that can be helpful, because if you're having some recurring disagreement, maybe it's because you're trying to change something about each other that just really won't ever change. And that isn't horrible news, and it's not like an excuse to say, oh, well, my temperament is what it is, and so I can just keep on doing this behavior that irritates you. That's not a great idea. The better perspective is to discover your temperament with the perspective that you can learn how to manage it and how to maximize the strengths, money management-wise, that tend to come with each temperament, and learn to manage around the weaknesses.
Mm. Because if we don't do that, Matt, and lean into it, then we end up living separate, even secretive financial lives, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, back to some of the research on this topic, it's pretty eye-opening when men and women are asked questions that really depict the state of their relationship when it comes to money. So, for example, 20% of married people agree with this statement: I don't discuss how much I make with anyone, including my spouse. That's kind of surprising, isn't it, that somebody wouldn't even know how much their own spouse earns? Nearly two-thirds of married people have no idea when their spouse plans to retire. Can you imagine you're seeing your spouse go out the door in the morning with the golf clubs, and that's your first hint that they may have retired?
Wow.
Something like 44% of married people say it's okay to keep financial secrets. The typical, most common type of secret is debt of some kind, credit card debt and such. Roughly 40% of men and women confess to lying to their spouse about how much they spent on something. And this one is kind of interesting. While women have a fairly good feel for what financial issues are important to their husbands, husbands, not so much. So, for example, Rob, a relatively small percentage of us men apparently believe that having the right investments is something that's important to our wives, whereas nearly half of women say that's important to them. And less than half of men think that having money set aside for emergencies is something that their spouse cares about, whereas, not surprisingly, more than 70% of women say that is, in fact, something that's important to them.
Yeah, that's fascinating, Matt. All right, so if couples then disagree on their finances, how do they reconcile those differences?
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to communication. I mean, communication is just a key to so many important good things in marriage. But it comes down to, if you understand each other's temperament, then that starts to provide kind of a roadmap for how to get the most from each other's kind of natural wiring around money management and work around those weaknesses, like I said. So, for example, there's different classification systems out there when it comes to temperament, and they all trace back to Hippocrates, the father of modern medicine, all the way back in 370 BC. He identified four temperaments: the choleric, the sanguine, the phlegmatic, and the melancholy. And so if we want to start unpacking some of these, you can start to see how helpful it is to understand, again, both how God has wired you up and how God has wired up your spouse. So if we just choose one of those, say the choleric, if you want to start there. So the choleric is the hard-charging, kind of bottom-line, type A sort of person. The financial implications is that these folks tend to be really good at crashing through obstacles. So you want to set a goal of saving up enough money for a certain purchase. They're the person to kind of set that vision and pursue that goal with a lot of vigor. But the problem, the downside, they all come with pros and cons. The downside to the choleric is that they can have a tendency to sort of run ahead of their spouse, sometimes even making decisions about investments or even spending sometimes without the input of their spouse, which is not exactly a great idea.
Yeah, folks are already starting to identify themselves as you're talking here, Matt. Let's move on to the sanguine temperament. What do we need to know there?
Yeah, the sanguine is the outgoing, colorful, winsome, kind of life of the party sort of person. So when it comes to career choice, very naturally, they tend to gravitate toward people-centered jobs. So they tend to gravitate perhaps to sales jobs. However, the other financial implication for them is that they don't tend to love the details. I mean, I heard somebody say one time that he never met a sanguine accountant, and that's probably true. So that combination of a people person sort of job in sales where there might be a variable income, that tends to not pair up very well with a lack of interest in budgeting. It can leave their finances kind of messy. So if you're married to a sanguine, the advice is don't try to turn your spouse into the keeper of the budget. That's probably not going to end well. Just get them to drop their receipts in the vicinity of the budget, and then you be the one to enter the data.
Yeah, I love how you're building a bridge from the temperament to how we actually then respond to that and assign different roles and appreciate each other's differences. Let's go to the phlegmatic.
Sure. So this is the person that tends to be kind of the steady Eddie, very reliable, dependable, predictable, really good, steady work ethic. They can be counted on to show up and methodically get the job done. However, they can kind of lack motivation to go the extra mile, and that might have them kind of underperforming in terms of their work potential, their career potential. They can also be frugal to the point of even being cheap. So if you kind of hesitate at the idea of leaving any more than a 15% tip at a restaurant, you may be phlegmatic.
That's helpful to know. All right, there's one more. It's melancholy. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, so this is not necessarily a sad person unless you think of budgeting as a sad activity, because melancholies tend to be the type that take most easily to the use of a budget. A melancholy is disciplined, a planner. They tend to have kind of lofty ideals. Now, while their detail orientation can make them really good at keeping records, they can sometimes be a little too detail oriented, striving for the perfect budget and getting frustrated if it's off to even a penny. They can also be a bit unrealistic, sometimes setting goals that are really beyond the reach of most mortals.
Yeah, that's helpful. All right, bring this home for us, Matt. After a couple identifies their individual temperaments, and by the way, there are a lot of resources to help you go deeper on this, how does that then help them?
Yeah, again, I think it's a fascinating area of discovery. I mean, let's all be students of our spouse and of ourselves, of how God has wired us up for our whole lives. I think it's just a fascinating journey of exploration. And when each spouse begins to really understand their own temperament and that of their spouse, it can foster empathy and grace. We can stop kind of blaming them for certain things and start to understand more of where they're coming from. It can help a lot in stopping to be so frequently frustrated by each other's financial tendencies, and again, to kind of gain an understanding of where they're coming from and why they're tending to react to certain situations as they are. And that can open up the possibility of learning how to maximize each other's natural money management strengths while navigating around their natural weaknesses. In essence, it's just a great way for couples to learn to manage money as a team.
Wow, this is a game changer, Matt. So thankful for your time today, my friend. Thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure, Rob.
That's Matt Bell with Sound Mind Investing. Read this article at soundmindinvesting.org. All right, your calls are next. The number, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. I'm Rob West, and this is Faith and Finance. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Sandy Rios. You know what? I miss you in the mornings, but now I'm hosting Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at AFR.net and SandyRios.com. And by the way, I finally wrote that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life from a small town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow, North Korea, and Washington, D.C. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and adventures, all for Christ and his kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com/faith. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
Forget about Facebook.
The last 10 days we've been banned twice, and is unbanning a word?
They put us under the ban. Christians and conservatives
don't need you, YouTube.
Banned one day, banned again.
AFR programs are now live streaming on the AFA streaming app. Now you can get shows like Today's Issues straight from the source.
Put back on the next.
Just say unbanned.
Unbanned.
Just search AFA streaming or visit streaming.afa.net to sign up.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing and the Faith and Finance program.
For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
Here's Rob West of Faith and Finance, heard here daily on American Family Radio.
We understand how important it is for Christians to leave a legacy that will impact generations to come. One way you can do that is through a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345. Or visit them online at afafoundation.net.
My grocery bill went up 11% this year. Gas, utilities, rent, all went up. But my paycheck, the same. I also pay for my own healthcare, a huge expense. A friend recommended Christian Healthcare Ministries as an option to insurance, and CHM helps pay for medical needs while allowing some breathing room in my budget. Open enrollment is here, so make the switch today with potential cost savings up to 40%. Christian Healthcare Ministries at chministries.org/faithfi.
Grateful to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio, live from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. We're delighted to be here alongside so many others proclaiming the good news of Jesus Christ on the airwaves and over the internet and all forms of media. It's fun to walk through the hallways and see so many familiar faces, and all with one common purpose, and that is to use media to lift high the name of Jesus in so many corners of the globe. And we're delighted to be a part of this. Many programs here on American Family Radio broadcasting from NRB this week, and we're delighted to do that. But we're still, of course, taking your phone calls even while we're here. We'd love to hear what's on your mind today as we think about specifically this hour, how we can apply God's wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. Here's why. We spend an hour every day talking about money. It's not because we want you to enrich yourself. Now, there's nothing wrong with having an abundance. We see many in God's Word, many people from the Bible that had extreme wealth, and yet others, I think the widow and her mite come to mind, that were giving out of her poverty. And in every case, it's about the attitude and the position of the heart. But our goal here is to equip you to be that faithful steward. You see, once we give our lives to Jesus as Lord and Savior, it's about stewardship. How are we managing what we've been given, each according to his ability, to what we've been entrusted? Some much, some dealing with a meager amount today in this season of life, but how are we found faithful no matter where we are? Well, we go back to God's Word and we apply the principles that we see there, starting with our heart check to say, is our heart in the right place? Do we see money as one of God's good creations, but not something that's to be worshiped as the world would have us to do? We worship God alone. Money is a tool to accomplish God's purposes. It can be a great blessing as we provide for our families and ourselves, as we enjoy it, as we give generously, which the whole act of giving actually loosens the grip of money over our lives, because it's the ultimate releasing of what God has entrusted to us. It's our demonstration that we trust God, so we can give it away because we know he will continue to provide. Well, when we operate from that biblical worldview, money becomes not a source of conflict, but a blessing. You know, when we started today with Matt Bell, our good friend, and talking about money and marriage, we know the stats. 70% of couples will have conflict over money in marriage. It doesn't have to be that way. Let me clue you in. As long as we have the right heart posture, as long as we have good open communication, as long as we see what our spouse is bringing to the table in terms of his or her understanding of money and their background and their wiring, and together we find God's heart and we use money according to our values as believers, it can be an incredible blessing, allowing you to accomplish all that God would have you to do. Well, let's do that together on this program today. So with your questions, call right now. Our team is standing by. The number, 800-525-7000. That's right, 800-525-7000. We look forward to hearing from you. All right, let's dive in today. We're going to begin in New York. Daniel, you'll be our first caller, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, I applied for a credit card, which I've been using to pay all our monthly bills. And then I pay it completely in full at the end of the month. And
yes, sir.
We're able to use it and get a lot of credit. We've got a lot of money back on it. But my question is, I did put my wife on recently as an authorized user. And I'm wondering if I was to pass away and the Lord was, you know, if the Lord called me home, if she would still be able to continue to use that same card.
Yeah, it's a great question, Daniel, and you've hit on something that I think a lot of folks overlook just as we think about how we can prepare for when the Lord might call either of us home in a marriage relationship. Two things you mentioned that jump out to me. I'll get to the second part, which is the primary question in a moment. But first, you know, you're using a credit card, I think, the right way. I'm not someone who says, don't ever use a credit card. Yes, they can be dangerous, just like anything that's misused, but it can be a real blessing and it should be done the way you're doing it, only for budgeted items and only when you can pay it in full at the end of the month. And in doing so, there is a great opportunity for rewards, including cash rewards, which you use and I certainly use in our budget. Now, to the second part of that, how do you handle this as a couple? Well, unfortunately, the way you've set it up, which, by the way, Daniel, is the way most people do it. Unfortunately, when you set up your spouse as that authorized user, it allows your spouse to use it while you, as the primary cardholder, are alive. But at death, it would not be able to be used. Being an authorized user does not give the surviving spouse the legal right to continue using the card. It would actually qualify as fraud. Now, they would understand in that situation what was going on, but it would be closed. The only way around that would be, number one, to have a joint credit card account. Now, these are less common. You certainly can do it, but that would be the way that as the surviving spouse, you could continue with the legal right to use it. The second way would be you'd each have a card in your name, perhaps where the other is the authorized user on each of the respective cards. The benefit of that authorized user status is while you're both living, you both get the credit information reported to your credit report. So that's good. And you both have access to the card. But you're hitting on that one issue where if the primary user were to pass away, that card is going to be closed once the credit card company is notified. So it's a good idea to make sure that in what would already be a difficult season, the surviving spouse has ongoing access to that primary credit card.
Now, I wonder if I could go back to my credit card company and change it to a joint credit card.
You could certainly ask that, and they may offer that. Not every credit card company offers a joint account. If not, you would just need to open that second card to make sure that she would continue to have access moving forward.
Okay, you've been a great help. Mm-hmm. Another great help was when I took your advice on the taking the required minimum distribution on my IRA.
Oh, good. Did you do that through a charitable contribution?
Yes.
Excellent.
That works out great.
I'm delighted to hear it, Daniel. Well, listen, thank you for listening, sir. We appreciate you calling today. May the Lord bless you and call anytime. We're going to take a break, folks. Back with your questions, 800-525-7000. Call right now. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. We'll be right back.
We are grateful for support from Timothy Plan. Are you unsure if your investments align with your values? Well, for nearly three decades, the goal of the Timothy Plan has been to guide clients on a biblically responsible journey with its mutual funds and ETFs. More information is available at timothyplan.com. Investing includes risk, including possible loss of principal. Before investing, carefully consider funds, investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses contained in the prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Read carefully before investing. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners LTD and ETFs distributed by Foresight Fund Services LLC.
Started playing basketball at 9 years old. I ended up having teammates that were my teammates all the way up through high school. Then the Lord began to challenge me. Abe, you're a Christian, but have you ever shared the gospel with your teammates? I began to realize, no, I hadn't. What I'm saying is that God moved me to be concerned beyond me. It is impossible for you to be truly born again, yet you remain unconcerned about the people around you.
Tune in to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays at 5 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Absolutely free. We know you've learned to be suspicious of those words, but really, you can get biblical financial wisdom delivered to your inbox each week absolutely free. Articles, videos, podcasts, and special offers on biblical resources. Nearly 60,000 people receive our free weekly wisdom email, and you can too. Create your free FaithFi account by going to faithfi.com and click sign up to begin receiving weekly wisdom in your inbox.
Progressive elites in Hollywood, big tech, mainstream media, and higher academia are lying to our next generation. They want to convince our young people that America's biblical foundation is offensive, outdated, and must be overthrown. Your gift today will unleash AFA action to share the timeless truth of why protecting the biblical family is essential to the survival of the American Republic. You'll also get the free DVD and booklet set, Progressive Threat to the American Republic. Visit AFAaction.net.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Well, it's great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio, live from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention here in Nashville, Tennessee. We're at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel. This is like a city under a roof. It is massive, but so great to be here with so many others using media to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ literally around the globe, and delighted to be a part of it, but also delighted to be taking your calls and questions today on anything financial. We've got one line open, 800-525-7000. Our team is taking them as quick as they come in. We'd love to get you on the air. Let's go to Tennessee, actually, where I am today. Joyce, great to have you on the program. Go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, my question is, my prayer partner asked me this about a month ago, and I told her I didn't know, but I'd ask you. She said if she wanted to give out some money out of her IRA, how's the best way to do that? And I told her, I guess you get it out and pay 20% off the top and then give it to your kid. I didn't know how to do it. So
Yeah. There's only two ways to get it out to give to your kids. Okay. One would be at death, which is probably not what she's looking for, but she can establish a beneficiary on the account, a named beneficiary, and it would pass directly to those individual or individuals outside of probate. Now, I suspect she's talking about while she's living, and you're right. The only way to get that out, Joyce, apart from a qualified charitable distribution, which we talked about a moment ago, once she reaches age 70, but to give to an individual or for her to spend it, the only way is to take a distribution, and that would be added to her taxable income. So whatever her marginal tax rate is, she'd pay income taxes on it just like it was income at tax time.
Yes. Okay. That's what I told her. Thank
okay.
you.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks for calling today. To North Carolina. Hi, Evelyn. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you for the wisdom that we've gleaned and been blessed by you. My question is about the 529. Our daughter and son-in-law are saving in a 529, and my husband and I want to contribute to that. And on another show, you said that if the child gets good scholarships, and they don't need all the money that's in the 529, it can be used for other things. And I was wondering just what you meant by that. And also you said in a 529, on another program, you said in a for a 529, you can use up to $10,000 for private education. Is that per year?
Yes, ma'am. Okay, great questions. I like the 529 college savings plan a lot. It's one of my favorite tools to save for college. Think about it like the Roth IRA. So you're putting in after-tax dollars. And by the way, you, as the grandparent, can absolutely contribute to the 529 that was opened by your grandchild's parents, perhaps your child. And so you all could give to one single place when you do that giving. Now, when you have a scholarship situation, you're able to take what's called a non-qualified distribution, which just simply means that they make an exception where for the withdrawal, you don't have the typical 10% penalty that you would have when you typically take it out for uses other than qualified educational expenses. The exception is when you're taking it out up to the amount of scholarships and grants that have been awarded, you do not pay that 10% penalty. Now, you will incur income tax on the amount, on the gains, on the profits, because what happened was you put in the after-tax money, so you can get that amount back, but anything that it that gained inside the account because of the increase of the investments, that's where you will still have to pay tax on that gain as you take it out as a non-qualified distribution, but you just miss that penalty specifically when it's for, you know, in the same amount as the scholarship awards. Now, with regard to the K-12 education, you're able to use up to $10,000 total for kindergarten to 12.
Oh, okay. Up to $10,000 for the whole kindergarten to 12 years old. I see. Okay. Now, I have one other question, if you have time.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. In regards to I-bonds, when we do cash them out, will we receive a 1099 from, you know, the Treasury? Or I understand that we have to pay, is it state tax and not federal tax? Or maybe I have that reversed, but we will have to pay some taxes on that interest. How does that work that we would find out what we have to pay?
Yeah. So the interest earned by purchasing and holding those savings bonds is subject to federal tax at the time the bonds are redeemed. So you redeem the bonds, and then whatever the interest that's earned, you would pay federal tax on that in the year of the redemption. They are not taxed at the state or local level.
Okay. And how do we know what... do we get a 1099 in regards to that federal tax?
Yes, you will. Yeah, the 1099 is available at the beginning of each year, and that would be provided to you by the Treasury.
Okay, so it will be provided to us in the beginning of each year so that we should get a 1099 in the beginning of this year, even though we haven't cashed it out?
No, only in the year following the redemption, because that's when the interest
only
is credited.
I see. Okay. Thank you so much for your clarity.
You're welcome.
You,
let me clarify one additional item, though. I think I said on the $10,000, it's one time. It's actually per year. So on the 529, K-12, up to $10,000 per year.
Per year. Very
yes, ma'am.
Good. Very good. Thank you
right.
so much, and God bless you.
You're welcome. Thanks for your call today. We appreciate it. Let's quickly go to Kansas. Hi, Randall. How can I help?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. And
sure.
I had a stock question. My mother, I had sold some stock between me and my sister. My mother agreed for the sale of the stock. We had sold it for $47,000, and they did not, my mom and dad did not keep good records as far as when they had purchased the stock. So we do not know how much they gave for the stock. And the tax accountant says we are going to have to pay the full amount if we can't figure out how much the stock was purchased for capital gains. Can you tell me how I can figure out when it was purchased?
Yeah, so have you contacted the brokerage firm to look for any kind of historical statements to establish? I mean, you can find the stock price as of a certain date. You just need to establish the date of the purchase. And so I would typically go directly to the source, which would be the brokerage firm where that purchase was placed, and have them look back through their historical records.
Okay. Does it make any difference she had put it in her name, because my father had passed away between the time they had bought it before and then she had put it in her name? Does that make any difference?
Because it was marital property, so he bought it in his name only. Is that right?
Well, no, it was his and her name, and then
she
had put it in her name then.
Yeah.
Just her
so
name.
It would be the original cost basis when it was purchased. So the next step is to go back to that brokerage firm and try to establish that original purchase date and back into that cost basis. Thanks for your call, Randall. 800-525-7000. A quick break and back with your questions right around the corner.
My wife and I stumbled on the AFR channel on Roku last night, and I was amazed. Not only did it give us access to American Family Radio talk programming or 24-hour AFR music, but the access was instantaneous. And AFR on Roku gives us access to AFR podcasts with archives of our favorite talk shows and special programs. We listened to the Don Wildman Memorial Show, which my wife had missed on the radio. The AFR channel on Roku. Install it free today.
I know darkness is in the world, but that don't mean I gotta kick open my front door and welcome it. Why would we continue to tolerate wickedness at any level? God knows the scope of your access and impact. He knows that. But he does expect you to be his ambassador in your world.
Tune in to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays at 5 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Are you searching for a way to become a better, faithful steward of the resources that God has given you? Well, download the FaithFi app and join the 37,000 others who are already using our app. The FaithFi app will provide you with wisdom, community, and simply help you stay on track with your finances. We have 3 money management options to choose from, so find an option that fits your unique needs. It's available on desktop or mobile. Simply go to faithfi.com and click app to get started.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio, live from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention here in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Rob West. We're taking your calls and questions today on anything financial in our final segment today. There's still room for your questions. So what are you thinking about in your financial life? Give us a call. 800-525-7000. The team is back in Tupelo in the call center waiting to take your call, and we'll get you on the air quickly. Again, 800-525-7000. You can call right now. Let's go to Mississippi. Hi, Rebecca. Thank you for your patience. Go right ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a question that I need to get the reason for. I'm 85 years old. I lost my husband in 2022, and then my daughter came to take care of me, and she passed away back in October. And so I have one son left, and he has 2 children. I have a CD. It's around $70,000 and coming due in May. And I wanted to take some of that money and split it between my son and, well, not split it, but give $10,000 each. One to my son, one to my grandson, the oldest grandson, and then the youngest. The reason for that is because my grandson, oldest grandson, just got married, and they're saving for a house. And my youngest grandson is in his first year of college, and he will need some cash, I think, to continue. And I'd like to give them each $10,000 each. That'll leave me $50,000 plus a $70,000 IRA.
Okay. Yeah, very good. Well, first of all, you sound like a generous grandmother, and I know this will be an incredible blessing to your children and grandchildren. You can absolutely do what you're describing here, Rebecca. The IRS allows you to give a gift to any individual of $18,000 in the year 2024. If you were married, you could put that together and give an individual $36,000 because you could each give $18,000. You're able to give more than that and still not pay any tax, but when you go beyond the $18,000, you would have to file a gift tax form just to let the IRS know you did it, because it would chip away at your lifetime exemption, which is north of $12 million. So you're probably not going to get there. I'm certainly not either. But under that $18,000 per year number, which you're certainly there at I think you said $10,000, then you can absolutely do that. You just write them a check. You don't pay tax on it. They don't pay tax on it. It's just a gift. And you don't even need to let the IRS know you did it.
Yeah. And I have another question. I'm looking at the 2023 1040. And okay. It tells on the deductions, it says married filing jointly or qualifying surviving spouse. Is that what I take, or do I take a single head of the household?
Sure.
Standard.
Yeah. Do you normally file your own return, or do you have a tax preparer do that for you?
I have a tax preparer for this time because I cashed out a treasury bond, and I'm paying tax on the difference in that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But and I just wanted to have an idea of what I'll be paying.
Sure. Yeah. So you can file as the qualifying surviving spouse for the 2 years after the year okay. in which your spouse passed away.
Okay. Okay. That sounds good.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I appreciate it so much, and I God bless you.
Well, thank you. I'd love to send you a copy of a book, Rebecca, that I think will be a blessing to you. It's called Wise Women Managing Money, and it's written by a good friend of mine, Miriam Neff. And when her husband, Bob Neff, passed away, she started a ministry called Widow Connection just to be an encouragement to widows, and specifically in this area of money management. And the book, I think, will give you some helpful insights and guidance on how to think about money management in this next season of life. And so if you'd stay on the line, we'll get your information and send that out to you as our gift. Again, it's called Wise Women Managing Money. Okay?
I just appreciate that so much. Thank you.
I'm delighted to do it. God bless you. Thanks for calling today. Let's go to Louisiana. Hi, Rochelle. How can I help?
Hi. I'm doing well, and I hope you're doing well.
I am. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question. So I want to know if I am trying to purchase real estate as a means of an income for me. I wondered, for the duplex that I'm looking at purchasing, should or is it a good idea to take a loan from my life insurance policy just for that, just to help, I'll say it that way, before I purchase the duplex?
Yeah. And so how does the loan from the life insurance fit into the purchase? What is the purpose of taking that loan?
Well, just because I have about $10,000 right now that I want to put toward the loan. But I was told that if I just had about $4,000 more, the payments per month would be less. And it's about $800 less. That's why I thought about it.
I see. Okay. Yeah, I would prefer you not to take that loan from the life insurance for that purpose. So do you have the ability to service the debt if you don't take it, just based on the savings that you have you could put down?
I do, but yeah, I do.
Okay.
Because I don't really know right now what I'm doing, so I want to listen to you. I do have it. I just thought that would be a good idea. So.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And I love you investing in real estate. I think that makes a lot of sense. What kind of down payment would you have? How much equity would you have as a percentage of the value of the property?
They told, let's see, it might be around, it may be around $10,000.
Okay. What's the purchase price on the duplex?
It's about $50,000 because I'm thinking of making changes. It's in an area where it's, you know, they help you with building up that area.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Well, I would just go into it making sure that you could weather a season, you know. So for instance, let's say we got into a recession later this year and it was more difficult for you to find renters than you expected. I just would want to make sure you're not putting unnecessary strain and stress on you financially to be able to carry that property. So just take a look at that. I mean, with the interest rates right now being higher, you know, I think I would prefer, unless this is just an unusual property, you're getting at an incredible deal, I'd prefer you wait maybe a year or so until rates are a little bit lower, maybe in the fives, preferably the fours, just to keep that debt service cost down. But if you do go ahead with it, and I realize there may be a reason to do so, I would just really crunch the numbers and make sure. Okay. All right. You're
going
to wait
a
bit.
I'm going to listen. I'm going to be obedient, and what I'm going to do is going to help me save more money, so then I may be in a better position. So
I like that
a lot. I'm good with that. Okay.
Yeah, I like that a lot. All right, Rochelle. Hey, call anytime. Thanks for being on the program today. We appreciate it. Quickly to West Virginia. Hi, Michael. How can I help?
Okay, my question has to do with the comments you made about 529s, K1 through K-12.
Yeah.
I was under the impression that for college, if you spend money from your 529 account, which I have for my two grandsons, that it was not taxable. Now, am I wrong on there?
No, you're exactly right. So if that money comes out for qualified educational expenses, which is a little broader in its definition when you're using them for college expenses, it goes beyond tuition and room and board to some other expenses, including books and fees. It's coming out tax-free, including the gains. Now, you can also apply that to the up to $10,000 a year that's coming out for K-12 education. Now, that's tuition only, but that's coming out without any taxes whatsoever. What we were talking about is a withdrawal from the 529 specifically because the child got a scholarship award and doesn't need to use the money for college. And the 529 plan in most states allow you to pull that money out up to the amount of the scholarship or grant to get it out of the 529. Now, that's considered a non-qualified withdrawal. You don't have to pay the 10% penalty because of the scholarship, but you have to pay the tax on the gains. But that's only when we're talking about scholarships and grants, not just the way you're doing it for just normal college expenses. Does that make sense?
For college-related expenses, room, board, tuition.
Yes, no tax. No tax whatsoever.
No tax. You can pull it out to a zero left in your account, right?
Yes, sir. You're exactly right.
Thank you very much. You did clarify that for me.
I'm so glad I did, Michael. Thank you for calling today. By the way, folks, if you're interested in checking out a 529 college savings plan, it may not be your state's 529 that's the best for you based on the performance of the underlying investments. My favorite website for you to do an analysis of your state versus others that you might consider is called savingforcollege.com. Check it out today. Well, that's going to do it for us live from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention here in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Rob West. Let me say thanks to to my team today, pushing all the buttons here in Nashville, Mr. Devin Patrick, my producer, back in Tupelo, Robert Youngblood, and also grateful for Adam Suddeth sitting in today. Providing great research today is Mr. Robert Sutherland. On behalf of those gentlemen, I'm Rob West. Thanks for joining us. Come back and join us tomorrow. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.